Hi, my name is Martin Purnell, and welcome to Off Grid Christianity, a weekly podcast for those who go to church or don't go to church or who are just disillusioned. On today's Off Grid Christianity, we have not one but two special guests. Guest number one, I first knew at the start of my Christian broadcasting career in the mid-1990s with his powerhouse radio show. I have often wondered what became of him, so it gives me great pleasure to welcome to Off-Grid Christianity, Ron Hutchcraft. Hi, Ron. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing fine. I did disappear there for a while, apparently, huh?
Yes.
You wonder what became of me.
Well, maybe
your other guests can tell you that.
Well, I disappeared for about 20 years, so, you know, I'm back now. By the way, all I can see is your office, but whereabouts is your office based in the wider context of the United States of America?
Well, if you go right to the middle of the country, for many, many years, for almost 30 years, we were in the New York area, and I lived in the suburbs of New York City and worked in the city in ministry there. And about 20 years ago, we moved to Arkansas. And that is right in the middle of the Ozark Mountains and near one of the top tourist places called Branson, Missouri. It's very popular in America. So we're in the center of the country. We're closer to a lot of reservations. And we move from the highest cost of living in America to just about the lowest. And that's good. That's good when you're spending God's money.
Yeah. So the Milky Bars are on you then. That's basically it, isn't it?
Send you some great barbecue if you'd like it.
You're on. thanks, Ron. And sitting next to him is guest number two, who grew up on the, and I do apologize if I get the pronunciations incorrectly. Navajo, is that right? Navajo?
It's actually Navajo.
Oh, sorry. More about that in a minute. Navajo Reservation in the USA. But what is his connection with Ron Hutchcraft? We'll find out in the next hour. Gives me great pleasure to welcome to Off Grid Christianity as well, Wes Francis. Wes, thank you so much for joining us today. Good sir, what's the weather like in good old Arkansas?
Well, I'll tell you what, it's a big difference between Arizona and Arkansas. So even just the transition of that is something within itself. But it's been nice.
Well, we've got
much of the Navajo Nation is located in Arizona, and that's where Wes is from.
Yes, more about that in a minute, no doubt, as well. And should you wish to contact us here at Off Grid Christianity, our email address is ogc@accessradio.biz. And we're on Facebook as well. Just search for Off Grid Christianity. There we go. Right. Well, before we get into the main context of today's podcast, five simple questions to you both. And you can take it in turns to answer. Question number one. Let's go with Wes first, shall we? If you could invite anybody from history for an evening meal, Wes, alive or dead, so that you could ask some questions, who would it be?
You go.
I really don't know. I took a while to think about this, and I was like, I'm an introvert by... I like eating alone. I really couldn't come up with an answer.
He thinks I'm a character from history, Martin. That's the problem. He's like, oh, Ron Hutchcraft. He's a character from history.
Yeah, that's too far back of history.
That's prehistoric. That's right.
I will let you off on that one then. So we'll ask Ron. Ron, if you could invite anybody from history for an evening meal so that you could ask some questions, who would it be, good sir?
Well, I thought about that, and I think, we had a great president named Abraham Lincoln.
Yes.
And who did some great things, saw us through our worst time, the Civil War, was a man of no faith much of his life, or very limited faith. During the war, he came to a very strong faith that he said was what pulled him through. One of the things I loved about him was that he got all his rivals together and made him his cabinet. All the guys who had run against him and opposed him. And he said, I'm going to make them my leadership team. And that was gutsy. And he also made his points by telling stories. He was a great... I like that because I sort of do that.
Yeah. Almost like Jesus and his parables, really.
Exactly. Yep. Yeah.
Fantastic.
I like storytellers.
Yeah, me too. That is brilliant. Thank you for that. Question two. We'll stay with you, Ron, first of all. Who is your favorite biblical character or favorite biblical story or favorite parable?
Now, I know Wes reads the Bible, so he got this one.
Yeah, I got one.
So, Ron, you go first. Who are you going to go for?
Okay, I will. I think the first, our family was not a church-going family, but the first time I was introduced to Jesus, I saw a painting of him as a shepherd carrying a lamb in his arms and walking in front of a flock of sheep. It's a pretty famous painting, mm-hmm. by a stream. So for my first impression of Jesus, it was like, well, I'm the little lamb in his arms, and Jesus is the shepherd. And he keeps the sheep safe, and he makes sure that they have what they need, and he loves on them if they're hurting. And he's always been my shepherd. So when Jesus talks about that he is the shepherd and his sheep hear his voice and they follow him, that image that Jesus used to portray himself and his relationship with the people who belong to him has seen me through even the darkest days of my life, when I'm not a little boy anymore, but I'm still the lamb in his arms.
That's a great answer. Do you know, as soon as you started telling me that story, I was taken back to when I was like 7 or 8 and can imagine that. And I remember a lady from a different church coming into me one day and explained just how you did. And she said, all the animals will be together and they will be together and you could be with the lions. And I was going, I don't want to be with the lions. I want to watch the cricket, thanks. You know, I don't want or baseball, as you would say. And I got really annoyed that, you know, there'd be animals coming in to watch the cricket. No, thanks. So
I don't talk about sheep very authoritatively because Wes is from a nation of people who are a herding people, H-E-R-D. They are a herding people for centuries. And so I'm careful about what I say about sheep because he's like, they don't do that.
Well, let's go to Wes then, Wes. Sir. What's your answer?
I'd probably have to say, of course, a story. It'd have to be the book of Job and Job's story. It was one of the very first stories that I had read on my own, and you know, kind of just analyzing and seeing Job's story really struck me, because this was a man who had everything, and like Ron explained, you know, I'm from the Navajo Nation, and so the way we had considered wealth was different, and it was the same way that Job's wealth was explained, you know, having a big family, having livestock, you know, having all of these things. And so I understood what that was. And I understood that Job had, he was very wealthy. And to see that all of that was taken from him, and at the end of all of it, he said something that I'll never forget. And that when I look back on it now, was God's first time pulling me towards him. And it was when Job's wife had told him, you know, you should curse God and die. And instead of doing that, you know, Job still praised God. Job still said, you know, God, I'll love you. And I didn't understand that. You know, I didn't understand why someone who had everything taken from him and had every reason to blame God didn't do that. He still said, I didn't understand that. And it was a big draw and a big pull towards God personally in my life. And so I think that's a story I really enjoyed and I liked.
Yes, great answer. Thank you very much indeed. We seem to be getting a bit of stuttering from every so often with the internet connection, but majority of that came through, which is great. Thank you. Question 3. If you could be Prime Minister for the day or the President of the United States for a day, you can choose and could change any law or impose new law, what would it be? Ron, what are you going to go for?
Something that would keep them from electing someone like me again, I think would be, I don't know what that law would be, but I think probably because I would want to help protect the most vulnerable people in our country. And to me, the most vulnerable would be an unborn baby. So I would hope that there was a way that we could construct a legal structure that would protect the powerless but very precious unborn baby, and at the same time protect that mother.
Not the first person to say that, so it could well be coming to law very, very soon if you and a few others on my podcast get together. Great answer. Thank you. Young Wes, what are you going to go for?
I do very much agree with Ron on the subject and area of you know, unborn children and how that's defined today and how a lot of people are trying to define it. I think it's very important that you know, we do everything we can to protect them, and we do everything we can to stand behind that. I also would do something in that area and would like for that to be a change as well.
Great. Thank you very much indeed. Question four.
We did not confer on this, Martin.
No, it's good. Question four. Ron, again, outside of family events, what has been your most enjoyable day out so far, please?
Well, it would be more than a day out, but and now I'm not just saying this because I'm in when you're on your program, but Karen and I had some of our most memorable days when we were in England together. One time I was there, she was able to come with me, and we had a little time in the Cotswolds. And the charm of that area is still very memorable. We really, really enjoyed as well the energy of London. You know, I mean, we were New Yorkers, but boy, it was there's something special about London. And all of a sudden, I have an urge to have fish and chips for some reason while we're talking this way. So,
yes, I buried my dad in the Cotswolds. More about that since your fair. But yes, that's where he grew up. Well, actually, I'll tell you now, just to show you how bad my humour is. But we had the urn of his ashes, and in the town, in the Cotswold village where he grew up, there's a little river. I mean, it's the archetypal picture that you can see. And so I got the ashes, and the relatives were around. And as that, two mallards were floating past me, and I was literally throwing in the ashes, going ashes to ashes, and I just couldn't. I just couldn't stop myself. So ashes to ashes, duck to duck.
Oh no.
Yeah, sorry.
No.
Yeah.
Have you no shame?
No,
oh my.
Not.
Okay.
Not. Yeah. Yeah, so always but it was one of those beautiful days there as well. We met all the family after. So it's an amazing place, the Cotswolds. Absolutely amazing. Wes, what about you, sir?
I think it was around when I was 18. It was the first time I had had a job. And I was in school and college, and I had asked my mother, we should go out. We should take my younger siblings out, and we should go just have a day to ourselves. And I wasn't making a lot of money, of course, but I got to take them out to like a movie, you know, dinner, and kind of spend the whole day with them. And wow. It felt so good because for the first time, it felt like the burden wasn't on my mother. You know, to be doing all of that.
And wonderful.
I think it was something that I always remembered because it's also a moment where I started to see that I could give selflessly, you know, and not just with, you know, materialistic things, but also just my time, you know, in my life.
Yeah.
So that was something that was real memorable to me and that I always remember. And my mom always remembers too. And so, yeah.
Yeah, it's brilliant. Cool. Absolutely brilliant. Brilliant answer. Thank you. Question five, then. We'll start with Wes first. What has been your most embarrassing moment to date, please, Wes?
This is my best time. Best part of this interview. I can't wait to hear this.
This is the whole reason why Ron wanted me to be a part of this podcast. He was like, you have so much to share. And I saw this question, and I was like, this is exactly why you wanted me here.
You got me. You got it.
I guess I have to share it now. Well, there is one that comes to mind, and it is very embarrassing. And I was contemplating and debating and going through the five stages of, you know, grief to share this.
Oh God!
But we were on a ministry trip on Eagle's Wings over the summer, and we were all sitting in a bus, and I was sitting next to a couple of my friends, and we were laughing, having a good time, and I had sneezed, and the sneeze had caused me to pass gas, and the person that was sitting across from me in the chair was the only one who heard it. And they started laughing, and everyone was trying to figure out why they were laughing. And I was just sitting there red, and I did everything I could to make sure that they wouldn't tell anybody. And so now whenever I see them or whenever like the subject of anything kind of comes up, I still get so embarrassed, and I still get so it's bad.
No, but it's good. It's honest. Thank you.
Aren't you glad you asked?
I am, because I'm going to ask you now, Ron. Try and beat that one.
Well, I don't want to beat it. And my most embarrassing moment is having to answer this question.
Hey.
So, no, well, what comes to mind is my junior year of high school, that it is would be grade 11. I was I wanted to impress this girl, and the girls that I knew were all scattered all across the St. Louis area. So I wrote this really incredibly mushy message on a Christmas card, and I thought, wait till she reads this, man. This will capture her heart. It was so good what I wrote, I decided I would write it to another girl in another part of the St. Louis area. And I thought it was so good that I wrote it to a third girl on another Christmas card. And it was so good that I literally wrote it to a fourth girl. And I'm like, they live all over the area. And so I was like, I can impress four girls with this. Well, they decided to have a slumber party the night after Christmas and bring their Christmas cards.
No.
I was doomed. Say no more. Classy guy, huh?
Brilliant. See, I bet you're glad I asked that question now, Wes.
I already knew that one.
Oh, you did?
I was going to hear a new one, and I wish I didn't know Wes's, but that's okay.
Listen, guys, thank you so much. You get a better understanding of you as well. I think I want to just quickly ask Wes, first of all, if that's right, because obviously, being a Brit, we hear snippets of what's coming out. But the Navajo reservation, the Navajo tribe, tell us more, please, just to put into context, please.
Well, yeah, Navajo Nation, of course, is we're the biggest tribe in North America right now. As far as land size and everything like that, you can fit about three small states in it, like, you know, Maine or, you know, like that. You can fit three states in there, but, you know, with however a square mile just there is, there's only about four or five convenience stores, you know, that cater to the reservation. So there's also a lot of poverty, a lot of hurts, you know, a lot of things that are going on in Native America in general, and that's just not on the Navajo reservation, but also on other reservations across Native America. And there's about 500 federally recognized tribes in the United States.
Oh, wow.
If you didn't know that,
no.
Or if any of your listeners didn't know that, but yeah, there's still a lot of tribes out here, you know, and also, you know, America's first mission field is often the one that's forgotten the most.
Yeah.
And so, you know, people who've been here before, you know, and people who are still here, you know, are still not being reached. You know, there's 4% of Native America knows Christ.
4%.
Yeah. Right. And it's something that always, you know, breaks my heart and always kind of brings me back to a realization of why I do what I do and why I'm, you know, I've surrendered even my life and my time to God is because, you know, I want to see not just my, just other tribes, you know, across Native America. You know, there seems to be this thing called a, you know, double blindness, you know, where the enemy is blinding, you know, the world and people to Native America. And he's also blinding Native America to Jesus and who Jesus really is, you know, biblically. And that's just a little bit of, you know, about the Navajo reservation. But don't get me wrong, you know, my people are very strong and they're very resilient, you know, and there is so much that they could bring to the table.
Yeah.
And that's my hope and my dream for my people is to see that the, you know, they're not a people who are hopeless. You know, sometimes there's just people without hope, you know, and the greatest hope that you can give somebody is a relationship with God through Jesus, you know. And so,
well, please excuse my ignorance, okay? And it's just to position it, because obviously we've got the Atlantic in between us. So we only hear little snippets. And it's only been in the past few years that we've heard, no, we can't say Red Indians anymore. We can't say Indians anymore. It's Native Americans.
Okay.
And then we had all the stuff about Washington Redskins, the American football team, changing their name as well. How much of that was, you know, the majority of the Navajo believing that this should be changed, and how many was it just a political thing?
It seems kind of torn between both. I know a lot of people who honestly don't could care less. You know, they don't. they don't mind, but then there are some people who do take great offense to it, because, you know, even the fact of like red skin, you know, it wasn't to imply the color of our skin, but there was actually people a long time ago, bounties that were taken, you know, how much money you can get for killing a Native American. And one of the things that they would do to Native Americans is that they would peel the skin off of their face. And that was where the term redskin came from. Yeah. And so that's kind of, you know, even just some history behind that.
Yeah.
And why some people take offense to it so much, and why it's a big deal to some people. And then you have other people who feel honored by, you know, a football team being called, you know, the Redskins. And but obviously, of course, now it's not that way anymore. You know, Washington football team changed their mascot, so, you know, it's for good reason. So
yeah. I think they're called Washington Commanders now, aren't they?
Yeah.
Got to be careful.
Good job. That's pretty good.
Yeah, well, I was told that you got to be careful as to call them Commanders, not Commandos, because, you know, if you shout out "Go Commandos," that means something completely different over here. So you have to be careful. Listen, thank you for that, Wes. Ron, I mentioned earlier on that I know you from way back by playing your tracks and stuff when you were doing Powerhouse. For those that don't know who Ron Hutchcraft is, please share more, please, sir.
Well, I first of all, I married up for that was the big great choice of my life. My wife Karen has been with Jesus for the past 6 years, but we had many years together, and so let's start with that. That's key.
Yes.
We had three children who each have three children. It's like we'd have a geometric pyramid.
Yeah.
No. It's a requirement that you're supposed to have one girl and two boys. And so we've kept that going pretty well. So we have nine grandchildren. So I have a baseball team, but I have no bench. We have nobody to put in.
Not yet. Other than
no relief pitchers or anything. The work that I've been privileged to be a part of has always been cross-cultural. I grew up cross-culturally on the south side of Chicago, and I love that. I've worked so much in African-American communities and Asian communities with welfare kids in Times Square, as well as poor white kids and rich white kids. But it's interesting, for all those years, and having been asked to speak different places in the country on America's young people, mm-hmm. I missed the most what were called in the largest report ever done on Native American young people, the most devastated adolescents in America. I never met young men and women with no dreams, Martin,
really,
until I went to the reservation. But there's no sense that I'm going to have a future. And if I'm not going to have a future, why would I have any dreams? I've known too many people who died young. Mm-hmm. And the tragedy of suicide rates that are three times that of any other kids in America. And in some parts of the country, it varies. It can be seven times and even 10 times greater than the rest of the young people in America. But if you know the history and all that was taken from the first people of our land and all that has been lost, and the abuse that they have suffered and the loss, that cumulative grief has brought about an almost serial grieving in the Native community. Wes knows it all too well.
Yeah.
And there is a sadness there. There is also great potential spiritual wealth. Billy Graham, the great evangelist, mm-hmm. said, that Native Americans are the sleeping giant. Those are his words. He said, if ever they were to awaken spiritually, he said they could become the evangelists who could reach America for Christ. And I truly believe they are the sleeping giant.
Yeah.
But as Wes said, 400 years ago, a man named John Eliot came from your land to this land, to the East Coast of America, and brought the very first gospel to the very first indigenous people of this land. Mm-hmm. That's 400 years ago. Now, after 400 years of mission work among the first Americans, only 4% know Christ. That's why what Wes said is so true. America's first mission field, and in many ways, America's last mission frontier. One great reason is the belief among Native Americans, and it is an understandable belief, that Jesus is the white man's God, and he is not for us.
Yes. Yes, especially when we hear the history of, Wes so eloquently put it as well. So that leads on then, who's going to speak on this, about the, and I'm sorry to hear about your late wife, Karen, by the way, Ron. So,
no, go ahead. That's fine.
Just a quick aside, did you write her that poem by chance?
Did what?
You know that poem you wrote to the four ladies on the Christmas card? Did you ever write it to Karen?
Oh, I didn't. I hadn't met her yet. See,
but later you didn't keep it.
I was bottom fishing at that time. I didn't. I hadn't gotten to the center of the lake yet.
So you then discarded that. You never used it again.
Yeah, that's right.
Thank you.
Did I just say that?
You did. And is it staying in? It is.
Oh, God. Well, I'm giving this guy ammo is what I'm doing. Oh, gosh.
Well, it's good to have a laugh, and it's good to have humor as well, you know, to show that we're real.
Yeah. Oh, indeed. You know? Uh-huh. But not at my expense. That's the only thing. Yeah.
Well, let's look further then. That you co-founded with your late wife, Karen, On Eagle's Wings. And it'd be great to hear from both of you. And no doubt you've talked about it before, but for those that know nothing about Eagle's Wings, please tell us more, please.
Wes?
Yeah, On Eagle's Wings is a ministry primarily dealing with young Native American believers going out to reservations across the United States and communicating the gospel to other reservations to other Native Americans. Mm-hmm. So basically, Ron is the little white guy on the bus who's praying for us as we're out there sharing Jesus, and we're using something common in Native America. We love our basketball. We love basketball, and so that's a tool that we use to draw people in, and also the team members that are part of the team are a draw for these people, because you know you hear about a bus full of 50 Native Americans coming to your reservation, you know, you're curious and you want to know, why are these people here? And so you get a crowd, you know, you get a multitude of people coming to see what's going on. And that gives us an opportunity to build relationships, and it gives us an opportunity to share with them and communicate them to them what Jesus did for them. Yeah. And most importantly, and it's my privilege to get to paint a picture for these people that Jesus isn't a white man's God, and to paint for them a picture who Jesus really is biblically, yeah, and to offer that to them in the same way that it was intended to be offered to us, you know, as a gift. And the gift's not yours until you take it. And so that's a kind of wings and what we do. It's to go out. It's to meet them where they're at, you know, and to find somewhere where they will be at, instead of saying, hey, come to us. We'll meet you where you're at. And so that's a little bit of a small overview of what On Eagle's Wings is.
Yeah. Can you talk a little more about that, how he's not the white man's God that they've always thought?
Yeah, so personally for myself, growing up, a big reason why I stayed away from anything religious or anything church is because all the times I ever saw Jesus in a painting of him in a church, he was blonde hair, had blue eyes. I thought Jesus was like 6'5", you know, and so I thought Jesus wasn't for me. And I had a lot of people in my life tell me that Jesus wasn't for me. And but what I had realized, you know, the time that I started to spend, you know, after, of course, reading Book of Job, and after God was really drawing me closer to him, I started to see that, you know, a lot of the things that I was being taught was wrong. You know, the things I was being told about Jesus was wrong. And one thing that I've started to read and learn about Jesus, you know, is that Jesus was a Mediterranean Jew. You know, he was a brown-skinned man, you know, like it says, he was a people like them, you know, yeah. And, you know, the part of which Jesus was from, you know, he touched so many areas in that place, you know, and so to learn that Jesus was not only brown, but also that he came from a tribe, you know, a tribe called Judah, you know, and even his language, you know, I thought Jesus spoke English, but that's not the case.
Apparently
Jesus
didn't speak
English. You know, he spoke a form of Aramaic, and to learn about even the name Jesus is only about 500 years old. You know, if Jesus were to stand with us and be in this podcast with us, you know, he would say, my name is Yeshua. Yeah. You know, I come from a tribe called Judah. And like to understand that and see that and to see a correlation of, you know, Jesus was a tribal man. You know, Jesus was somebody who understood a little bit of what I've been through, you know, even just the community that he was from, Nazareth. You know, people said nothing good comes from there. Mm-hmm. You know, that sounds like a reservation. You know, nothing good comes from there. Mm-hmm. And like all of these different things really started to kind of pop out to me, and like really Jesus seemed more real to me. Jesus seemed more like me. And it drew me closer to him because I was started. It felt like, you know, the blinds were being opened, and it felt like, you know, the scales of my eyes were being peeled off because I was starting to see that, you know, Jesus is for me. Jesus does want me. You know, God does want me. And to learn about what Jesus did for me on the cross took it to a whole nother level because I had never felt love like that before in my life. And to experience it in that moment, you know, to see that, you know, to hear those words, you know, in my heart, you know, that I love you so much that I'm willing to give my life for you, you know. And so to paint that picture for a lot of these young people and to tell them, like, you know, you do matter. You are important. You know, there is a reason why you are here. There's a reason why you were brought to this moment, you know, is so that you would hear about this Jesus and that you would be offered this relationship that he wants with you, you know, that this relationship that God wants with you. And so that's a little bit of what we do with On Eagle's Wings, and it's very powerful and it's very moving, you know, and it's the whole reason why I do what I do. And it's the whole reason why I'm a part of this ministry is because I was that young person that Ron was talking about that had no dreams.
Yes.
You know, when I viewed my life as a young man, you know, I grew up my dad was an alcoholic, and he was also very abusive to my mother and to myself. So I grew up in a lot of hurt, and I grew up with a lot of bitterness and a lot of anger because I felt like those were the only things my dad had ever taught me. And, you know, as I got older, it really started to escalate, and it really started to pour out into my life and into the relationships and the friendships that I had. And I got to a point where I thought, there is no way out of this. You know, I kind of just woke up one day and looked in the mirror and saw my dad, you know, and that's it struck me, and a sense of fear came into my life because I thought no matter what I did, that was who I was going to become.
Yeah.
And, you know, college, jobs, you know, they were just a means to an end. They were just money to be made to fuel my addictions, to fuel my alcoholism, you know, and it scared me because it felt like there was no way out. And it was the first time I had thought about taking my life.
Wow.
Because if I had no future, then I did want to be here. I did want to be alive, you know, and I just didn't know why. I didn't have a purpose. And I think when I came to that point, that's when God really started to reveal himself to me. And one of the ways he did that was through my mother. You know, after my mom had finally left my dad, you know, she had made some changes in her life. And those changes started because of this man named Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And it had always confused me. And I have had a lot of arguments with my mom growing up about Jesus and about religion and church. And I would put a lot of things in her face, you know, especially talking about our poverty, you know, talking about enduring my dad, you know, and the things we had went through, and kind of just seeing that, you know, kind of just saying, you know, like, you believe in this guy and you're telling me that he loves me, but I've never seen evidence of love in my entire life.
Yeah.
And I've said a lot of things to my mom I'm not proud of, but regardless of my attitude and my behavior, at the end of the day, she still said, son, Jesus loves you. So when I was in that moment, you know, that deepest, darkest moment of my life, you know, that was the question that was in my mind. Does Jesus love me? Am I worthy and deserving of love? Anyways, you know, and I wanted to know. I was scared. I was afraid, of course, because I had a lot of people in my life that didn't agree with the idea of Jesus. And so I had the fear of what people were thinking about me, and but I also had the fear of, like, if this doesn't work out, I'm taking my life. And I'm glad that, you know, I'm here now with you guys, you know, talking, you know, and speaking to you. But all of that is because of God's grace and God's mercy, because he guided me to stories in the Bible like Job, you know, that captured my mind and captured my curiosity. And one of the things that he really captured about me too was even just a sense of respect towards him, you know, because the God of the Bible is the only God of the Bible the only God ever to say, you know, regardless if you believe in me or not, I'm going to exist.
Yeah.
I'd never seen that before.
Yeah.
I had never seen a God, you know, even just within the own Navajo belief system, you know, I had never heard about anyone who could exist without me. And because, you know, growing up the way I did, it was always about what you had to give, what tradition you had to do, or what ceremony you had to do. You know, never once was I told that the gods of my people loved me. So when I started to learn more about Jesus and learn more about the God of the Bible, it really, I'm seeing and I saw that God was drawing me closer to him, and he wanted me to know him. Mm-hmm. And that meant, you know, taking steps, that meant sacrificing things, you know, to be near him. And when I read about, you know, like even just in John 3:16, when it says, for God so loved the world, you know, that really struck me, you know, the world. Like, it's so easy for us to get consumed in our own lives and be so selfish at the moment where we think the world is us. You know, the world revolves around us. And, you know, if we zoom out, you know, there's a whole planet full of people. And to see that and hear that God loves each and every single one of us so much that he was willing to give his son for us.
Yes.
And I had personalized that. And, you know, not only was it the planet, but, you know, down to the United States, down to my reservation, down to my home, and seeing me and God saying, you know, that I love you. Yeah, you know, some reservation kid who comes from a reservation nobody knows about, you know, who lived a hard life, who wants to take his life because he has no future. You know, you love me, you know, and I had never felt anything like that before in my life. And I was seeing that, you know, God's not trying to offer me religion. He's not trying to offer me rules. He's not trying to offer me church and all of those things. You know, he was trying to offer me a relationship. And I wanted that. I wanted what he was offering me. And I was seeing that it was being laid out right before me, right in front of me. And the only way it was going to be mine is if I reached out and I took it.
Yes.
And so that's what I did.
Yeah.
You know?
Do you know what's so amazing? And apart from the fact we keep freezing on the internet here, my feed over here isn't brilliant at the moment, but we got most of that. But what's so amazing for that is, where's your honesty, your passion? And no doubt you've told the story many, many times, but you keep it still so fresh. And as you know, the idea for me for Off-Grid Christianity is not just for people who go to church or don't go to church, but you know, who wants new God, but now have been so disillusioned by what's been going on, say, within the church or outside the church. You were taken right to the very limit of thinking about committed suicide. For those that are listening today and can really feel what you're saying and they're really hurting, what would you say to them?
Well, I would just tell you guys what I had felt in that moment. You know, God had allowed me to get to a point where I had to make a decision. I had to make a choice. You know, I had to stop listening to the world around me. I had to stop listening to the people who are whispering in my ears. I had to stop listening to media, to all these different things. And like it says in the Bible, you know, God says, you know, be still and know that I am God. And I think that was the first thing that I really had to do was be still. And what I would ask of you guys is, you know, be still and open your heart and listen, because, you know, God's doing everything he can for you to hear him. And even just this podcast, you know, there's a reason why you're listening to this. There's a reason why you're here. It's because God wants to tell you that he loves you and that he's never been far away.
Mm.
That he's always been there with you through all of this. And man, I know it can be hard. I know it can be a struggle, you know, life in general. It sucks sometimes, but I tell you what, I've learned something about God that has brought me through so much, is that God loves you so much that even when you can't carry yourself, you know, he's going to carry you.
Hmm.
And I would just ask that you would trust him with that. That you would give him those burdens, that you would give him those worries, man, because I'm an overthinker. And I put myself in all types of situations within my mind. And so, but man, God says, be still. He says, be still and know that I'm God.
Yeah. You know, Martin, the key, Jesus extended just his two-word invitation to people all the time. He said, follow me. And the reason that's so important to consider is that Jesus didn't say, follow my followers. If you've been disillusioned by some of Jesus' people, by people who carry his name, that's not Jesus. Jesus didn't say, follow my leaders. Maybe you know some Christian leaders that, you know, are no longer acting like Christian leaders.
Yeah, yeah.
You're like, well, if that's all he does for you, forget. No, no, no. Jesus didn't say, follow my leaders. He didn't say, follow my religion. He didn't say, follow my rules. He said, follow me. And what Wes discovered, and what we just heard him tell us, is that he discovered Jesus, just Jesus. Mm. Get rid of all the baggage. You know, Mel Gibson did a movie, The Passion of the Christ.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
still one of the top 20 blockbusters in our country. And what the favor he did for us was he stripped away 2,000 years of Christianity and took us to a cross. And a man dying on that cross for every wrong, stupid, selfish, angry, dirty thing I've ever done, and saying, I love you in the most powerful way it's ever been said. And there, before there were any churches, any steeples, any hymn books, any reverends, there was Jesus, a man dying on the cross for our sin. And if we can strip away all that other stuff and realize Jesus is the issue, he said, follow me. He's what matters.
Yeah.
And if you know some Christians who are a reason that you don't follow Christ, remember that it's all about him. That's not Jesus. A lot of us mess up. He never did. And he will. He never will. And it is so, the change that can take place and the freedom and the sense of being clean and knowing why I'm here. Our famous author, Mark Twain, said, the two most important days in your life are the day you were born and the day you find out why.
Wow.
Well, we all know the first one. We celebrate it and blow candles out on a cake every year. I don't anymore. I don't celebrate those. We just like another day on the calendar. But a lot of people live their whole life and never have that second day when they realize why.
Yes.
But God answers that question himself for us, the only one who could. It says in his book, we were created by him and for him. And so we're created for a relationship with the one who put us here. The only person who knows why I'm here is the one who put me here. And he can be found through what Jesus did on the cross.
Yeah.
It's such good news. And so it's so easy to miss if you think it's Christianity or you think it's Christians. Nope, it's Jesus.
I did say, I think in my one of my emails to you guys, that I'm amazed just how the podcast, where I think they're going to go, where they end up. I know I wasn't expecting where we're going here. So let's just continue it, if that's all right.
We didn't know either.
Well, the thing is that as previous episodes have alluded, there's a thing between discipleship and evangelism. You know, it's all very well coming in and speaking the word and then leaving. But to me, it's like, right, you're only at the beginning part, the part of your career now with Jesus, your journey with Jesus. So, you know, what does discipleship mean to you guys, please?
Go ahead, Wes.
Like the model of on Eagle's Wings that we do, we don't just show up to a reservation, you know, put on a Jesus show and then take off.
Yeah.
You know, that is not the model that we do and
the
use.
Traveling circus.
Yeah, we are not a traveling Jesus circus.
And you don't let them beat you at basketball either. You actually
play
to win.
Yeah. No, man, no. Nah, I won't allow that. But what happens is these places we go, we're invited. So there is somebody there already who is doing ministry, whether it's a pastor, whether it's a youth worker. You know, there's somebody there who already has a heart for Jesus and who has a heart for discipleship and seeing young people or their own community pursuing Jesus. And so that's our first draw. That's our first reason to be there. It's not to take over or try to be something for them that they can't be, but to come alongside them and to help them. So that's the model of On Eagle's Wings. And so whenever we are done, we do what's called a handoff. So we hand off, you know, our ministry to them, the people who are already there, the people that invited us. And it's pretty wild because we have some stories about communities and people who have invited us who had no youth group. It was non-existent, not present. You know, there was no such thing before. And when we come and we give the invitation for a chance to begin a relationship with Jesus, it births, you know, youth ministries.
Yeah.
You know, and there's we had one person who had absolutely no kids come to his events. And the next year, he's bringing over, how many was it, but like 15 to 20 young people to our yearly conference, you know. And like there's stories like that derive from this. And it's pretty cool to see God's faithfulness in that as well.
And what takes place within the team itself is I've spent my whole life helping young people know how to follow Christ.
Yeah.
But I'm telling you, I have never seen such accelerated growth in a relationship with Christ as we do in the 4 or 5 weeks that we are together on that team.
Wow.
Not only is it the people that they are reaching out to who don't have a relationship with Jesus, but they do, and their growth during that time, because we are intentional about helping to develop them as followers of Christ. For many of them, they even get a sense for the first time in their life. Remember earlier we said that they had no dreams because thought they had no future. Now, all of a sudden, they're like, I can make a difference. I've just seen me make a difference. I've seen what happened to me. Team up. We can actually break through to the hurt and the despair. I was those kids I'm talking to. You know, they can say that. And now I see that they listen to us, and we were able to get through to them. And so a number of them start to feel called to serve Christ. And that's why we have now a national conference, unique, called Warrior Leadership Summit. And right outside my window, we are completing the building of a 25,000-square-foot facility that is the On Eagle's Wings Leadership Center. You know, we have been able to go by God's grace, to over 100 reservations across the United States and into Canada, where there are reserves, they're called. And one by one by one, we have seen Native young people who thought Jesus was not for them choose him, because the messengers of Jesus are people like Wes, not like me. Like he said, I'm the little white guy on the bus praying.
Yeah.
That's where I belong. And they are the right messengers with the right Savior, the right message. I tell you, though, we have learned a way to pray before we go to a reservation. I've never prayed this way in all my years in youth ministry. And that is, Lord, keep them alive till we get there. That is a sobering prayer, but It is one we pray often in Native American ministry.
Well, and of course, the thing is that anyone can fake it. You know, for a couple of hours, you can put on a persona, right?
Yeah.
And people can believe it. I mean, I could maybe fake it for you, Ted. I was the world's greatest footballer after Pele. You know, and I could come up with the expressions. But to actually then, when you see my football skills, you might be doubting it. And then, but over 5 weeks, you then realise that I was definitely faking it. And I think that's the thing, isn't it? They're seeing you in those 5 weeks actually living it out. Would you agree?
Yeah. Yeah. You also, I remember my first years on the On Eagles Wings team, and that was kind of the attitude that I came into it. I was like, oh, I'm eventually one of these guys is going to trip up. One of these leaders is going to trip up. And like to see just the faithfulness of even just the leadership, and to see how they were trusting not within their own skills and their talents, but they were trusting God. And I think that was something that really elevated even my ministry and the calling in my life, was seeing that I can aspire to that, you know, and that I could be that too. And all of it came down to obedience. You know, am I gonna obey? You know, am I gonna trust God? You know, and I tell you what, you know, to see a young person at the beginning of one of these months, you know, sometimes they're super shy, sometimes they're super awkward, but at the end of the month, you know, sometimes they're the last one on the bus because they're still out there trying to tell somebody and win somebody for Jesus.
Yeah.
And you see a transformation happen over the course of a month. And these guys here at in Harrison with the Leadership Center, they got to a point where they were like, what if we had more than just a month with them? What if we could have a year or with some of these students, you know, some of these young people, to help, you know, grow them and help them analyze and see what they could do. Yeah. What they could bring to the table, you know, their gifts, their talents, and how we can expand on that. And I think that's something that's so, so powerful, and that's needed in Native America first and foremost, because we are in need of leaders. You know, I had never realized how rare it was for a young Native person to not only choose Jesus, but to choose to live for him.
Yeah.
You know, I've done ministry for the past 7 years, high school ministry on one of the reservations back home. And it's very, I had never realized how rare an On Eagles Wings team member was until I did those 7 years. Because there are so many kids out there that you could share Jesus to, but you can't make them choose Jesus. And so when you see a young person choose Jesus and say, I want to do more for him, you have to do everything you can to make sure that that reaches its full potential, because it's so vital and it's so important and it's necessary, because you're not just thinking about that person's life, but you're also thinking about the lives that they can impact. And so that's kind of went off a little bit, but you know, the idea of discipleship, you know, is very, very important to us. You know, it's not just, that's just a word that means, you know, discipline. You know, it's something that, you know, that's active, that's that we have to put effort into also. It's not a one-way street, but it's a two-way street. And so a lot of that falls on us as leaders too. And it's not a burden, but it's a good weight, you know, to recognize and remember that this has purpose behind it.
So Martin, as soon as we finish this interview, Wes and I have the privilege of going down the hall to do that very thing.
Brilliant.
And we'll be with some young Native leaders and working with, who are with us all year now. And we'll be today talking about how to know God's plan for your life. So,
see, I wish we could carry this on. You know, you walk the microphone in and we listen, because that is so important. That's so important. And it just reminds me again of the number of people that have put up with my rantings and my stupidity, you know, from when I started going back to church, you know, and they thought, now there's a rough diamond in the making there. And they were prepared to work with me and listen to me. And it is so important. It's so important. And I'm looking at the time as well. We've got so many things to go through. And we've only just scratched the surface. So I think to wrap it up, first of all, what comes to mind, first of all, where did you get the name On Eagle's Wings from, please?
Well, you know, it comes actually right out of the Bible where it says, first of all, the eagle is very significant in native culture and very important. But in Exodus 19, verse 4, it says, I carried you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself. And that's a picture that any native person can pretty much picture very easily.
Yeah.
So that scripture defined this movement, and it really is a movement, not just a moment when we go to a reservation, but it is a growing movement. And when Billy Graham said at the end of that quote that I quoted earlier, that this is a sleeping giant, if they could awaken, and we believe we are seeing the beginnings of that awakening, he also ended that statement by saying, remember these forgotten people. And the first people of this land, the people God planted here as the indigenous people originally, for them to be so forgotten and so neglected and mistreated is something we can't change history, but we can sure change the future.
Yay.
And these young leaders, the Wesses of the world, are a different future than the past has been. Praise God for that.
Okay. And Wes, why is the eagle so important in the Navajo history?
I'm not too sure why. I know it's when I was younger, whenever my dad would we would drive or we're going somewhere, and we'd see an eagle or we'd see something like a hawk. And I remember my dad gave a lot of reverence to it. My dad gave moments where he would pray to it, you know, and like it was almost as if it was a blessing to be in the presence of an eagle. And so that's kind of the significance of it, you know. Later on down the road, you know, my dad eventually gave his heart to the Lord. Oh, so that's something to I'd like to share as well. And
no, thank you.
Let you guys know. Yeah.
No, that's fantastic. Well, the time is almost beaten us. Blast.
We'll come back.
I'll talk to you off air about that, because that's what I was hoping you'd say. But before we close, I always end off the podcast with our guest of the day to talk about their Christian hero, someone that's preferably dead so that we can't be accused later on and say, oh, do you know what happened to such and such? Because we know what's happened. And preferably out of the Bible, please. So... Ron, who is your Christian hero, please, and why?
That's right, if he's still mine.
Well, I tell you what, that's very easy for me to think of. I mentioned him earlier. I don't know if every listener will know who Billy Graham was. He's died just a few years ago.
Yeah.
I was privileged to be at his funeral. Billy Graham probably spoke publicly to more people about Jesus than anybody in every culture. The things I admired about him were, number one, his humility. I had a chance to see him from a distance and see him up close as well, and to see that he was never impressed with himself. And he would always give credit to God and never really wanted the spotlight, even though he couldn't avoid it. He was of celebrity proportions, not by his choosing. And in your nation as well, he had some incredible moments at Wembley and places like that.
Yeah.
And also other things that people might not know about him is that he always stuck to Jesus and really tried his very best to avoid adding any baggage to Jesus, political. He wouldn't get involved in political things. I had the privilege of chairing one of his crusades and in the New York area, and we were at a press conference together. I don't know why I was there. I think I was a prop, but who cares that I'm there? But and somebody asked him some political hot question of the day, you know, New York reporters, he said, well, down in the mountains where I live, we have a lot of birds, wild birds. And he said, they have a right wing and they have a left wing. And he said, my impression is that it takes both of them to get them to fly straight. He said, I feel that way about politics. And it just disarmed whatever the question was, the hot issue of the day. He just managed to say, let's get it back to Jesus.
He
always stuck to he made the main thing the main thing and never wandered away from that. So there are a lot of things. Also, his integrity. Reporters all over the world tried to find something, you know, some hypocrisy in Billy Graham. And they never could, because he had very high standards about relationships, about money. And I had a chance to be up close with a lot of this and see that he was the real deal.
Yes.
So his authenticity, his humility, and his focus really made him my hero.
And there was a great program we were able to watch on from Public Service America, whatever it's called, a year or so ago. And it was a 2-hour documentary. And you could see that the press were really trying to bring him in on the politics, you know. And I think
they did the same with Jesus. They're like, we'll trip him up. We'll get him on this one.
Although I don't think Nixon was around during Jesus's time. I just got a feeling on that one. But but I do. In closing on Billy Graham, my favourite Billy Graham story, which I was witness to, when Oprah Winfrey was the in thing to watch on TV over here in Britain. We're going back now maybe 30 years, and he was being interviewed by Oprah, and he was explaining about being weeks away, and he wished he hadn't spent weeks away from his family. And Oprah said, do you think your wife ever wanted to divorce you? And he said, divorce, no. Murder, yes. And
I have heard that. That is so good.
It's a great answer, isn't it? It's a great answer. So there we go. Was that the answer, Billy Graham, that you were going to talk about, Wes?
No.
Oh, good. So who is your Christian hero, please?
I'd have to say Simon Peter of the Bible. Probably just because I see a lot of myself in him. And even just the times of when he denied Jesus, you know, and Jesus still told him, you know, this was going to happen. And of course it happened. And Jesus dies, you know, but thank God, you know, 3 days later, he defeats death, you know, and he comes back and all the disciples are coming, you know, going to him and everything. And when the angel appears before everyone, you know, when Jesus comes back, he says, you know, tell them, but also tell Peter.
Yes.
You know, and so Peter's probably a mess. You know, a lot like me, you know, just a mess.
Like us.
You know, God's mess, though. And, you know, having just denied the one person that you love the most, you know, 3 times, you know, but he also has a conversation with Jesus later, you know, and Jesus asks him a simple question. And I think it's a question that all of us need to ask ourselves every day, you know. He asks Peter, you know, he says, do you love me? And he asks him 3 times. And all the times, you know, Peter says, yes, I love you. I love you. And he gives him, you know, a commandment. You know, he says, you know, then tend my sheep. And I feel there's a lot of times God's asked me, do you love me? And I say, yes. And he says, well, you know what you need to do. And so Peter gives me hope.
That's a brilliant answer. I will say Wes has been taking care of his sheep.
Brilliant. That's, well, we can't go any further than that. That's a brilliant answer from both of you guys. Thank you so much, Ron. Thank you so much, Wes, for spending time with us on Off Grid Christianity today. And yes, let's book up another appointment because I've thoroughly enjoyed your time here. Thank you so much, guys.
Yeah.
Thank you.